He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday. It is, thank goodness, it's Friday edition of the Best Stocks Now show on this February 6th, 2026. And this is Bill Gunderson, professional money manager. I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And we are off to a huge, huge start in the markets today. Who would have expected it? But I'll take it, that's for sure. The Dow right now is up almost 700 points. It was up 700 points just a few moments ago. Right now it's up 685 points after what has been a very rocky week in the market. The NASDAQ is up 192 points. That's 85 basis points. The S&P is up 1%. That's up 69% so far here today. And, you know, I think it's the 10-year. I think that's helping out a lot. Interest rates have been falling here this week. We're down to 4.20 today after being up around 4.35 not too long ago. That's helping. Gold is recovering a little bit. It's up 1.1%. And I think the other thing that could be helping here is a little bit of a recovery in crypto. Bitcoin's back to 68,000 after just plummeting this week, and that maybe is also helping the markets. We're up really big here today overall, but we've still got a long time to go before the close. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management. And I was thinking, you know, maybe, Barry, on Friday, it'd almost be good to go back and look at the week in review because it has been a wild week in the market. It really all began last Friday.
Every asset class. Too.
Every asset class. Even my home went up and down, you know, during the week. We had a little earthquake here in the Charleston area, which I thought only that happened in California. But anyways, it all began last Friday with the big sell-off in silver of 28%, the 13% drop in gold, and all of a sudden the AI stock started to take a bath, which was kind of, you know, that software sell-off began really about a month ago, and that was kind of leading up to a big kind of a crisis, a profit-taking round in the NASDAQ. But one thing that didn't change throughout all of this, even though everything else changed, up and down and up and down, the earnings never changed. The earnings remained steady. And if anything, last Friday, as I reported, the earnings for this quarter actually even got even better than they were. And today, obviously, I'll get another update on earnings season. I think we got about 50 or 60% in the books right now. There's been winners, there's been losers, but overall, the trend has been we're beating the consensus estimate for the S&P 500 by a pretty wide margin so far. So that is always what I hang my hat on. I reminded everybody of that yesterday with the messages I sent out. I mean, there were some gruesome charts in the market. Microsoft, Spotify, Palantir, CrowdStrike, MicroStrategy, Coinbase, Palo Alto, Oracle, Roku, Robinhood, Bitcoin, Flutter. We don't own any of those, but there's some gruesome charts as of yesterday. Maybe yesterday was the final washout and cooler heads are prevailing. And we're getting a little bit of a rebound in probably one of the eyes of the hurricane right now, which has been the sell-off in Bitcoin and the software stocks. And they're improving also today. So we start on a very positive note here on this Friday. And we shall see where we end the day. We also have good news. Cuba is open to dialogue with the U.S. Can you believe that? As fuel shortages worsen.
I was going to say, they guess they need some gas. I hate to say it, but
yeah. I mean, they're dependent. I mean, they're an isolated little island there with not a lot of natural resources of their own, and especially oil. And they still have all those 46 and 57 and 52 Chevys and
gas guzzlers,
Fords. To keep running the economy down there. It'd be nice to see them come into the current century instead of being locked in the 50s. But that could be something very, very big. The island braces for severe fuel shortages in the coming days, and Cuba is now willing to engage in dialogue with the United States. So that's kind of a feel-good little story there, at least. I had to believe with Rubio as our Secretary of State that something would be going on down in Cuba. Bessent was on yesterday. Somebody sent me a message, because the market was down yesterday again, and someone sent me a message, maybe it's time for another Bessent interview. Well, guess what? He did do an interview yesterday, and the market's up again today. Bessent said he was wrong when he and his investment firm, Key Square Group, told partners back in 2024, this is before he was the Treasury Secretary, right, that tariffs are inflationary. He says, if I was mistaken, I want to correct it, he replied. And, of course, so far the jury is still out, but we have not seen inflation during this tariff war. And, number two, we've seen increasing earnings and fattening profit margins, which all go against the original narrative that, one, they would be inflationary, two, they would cut into earnings. Now, not everybody. Estee Lauder yesterday wasn't happy with the tariffs. It's cut in, but that stock has been struggling way before the tariffs came along.
Yeah, and he made a good point. I mean, he's talking about over all of the policies together. When you mash them together, because he's talking about in terms of stamping down illegal immigration, what that's done is actually bring the inflation component that's applied to housing, to shelter, down, because now you've got less folks competing right for places to live.
Exactly.
And so that's helped bring some of that shelter inflation down, which actually has a big component of inflation in general. So
yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting that he says that when he was asked, like you say, about the high housing cost, he said that mass unfettered immigration is what caused a great deal of housing inflation for working Americans. And that comes from a Wharton School study.
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting take on,
demand, right? I mean, you hear all the time about, supply of housing has been low. And then couple that, right, with a growing population, a lot of that, via open borders under the Biden administration. But, as we know in economics, it's supply and demand. If supply is down, demand is up.
Yes.
That makes prices go up.
And you can make a lot of money if you play that demand side of the
right.
equation. Okay, Trump RX is out. I got to believe that's going to crush a lot of these little good RX and Hims and Hers and Roe and all of these. But drug prices are going to fall dramatically. And buying the drugs through Trump RX, one of the big beneficiaries, Lilly's up 1.5% today. But I noticed that Novo was up 6.8% today on that news.
Well, and they were both of them were hurt yesterday with the announcement from him and Hers that they essentially had. It was interesting. The news came across that they had copied the Novo Nordisk pill, and I'm thinking, like, is that legal? I mean, it just kind of sounds illegal.
Well, they're in trouble.
Hims
and Hers is in trouble.
Yeah.
So now, after they digest the news, they realize that's a good thing for Novo Nordisk, and
right.
It's a good thing for Lilly, and they're the only two companies that have the weight loss drug. And we own them both, okay? As a hedge, we own Novo, too. Novo's got the pill. And Lily will soon have one. I would say, though, that really the story of the week was the Bitcoin crash.
Oh, yeah.
And I was looking at Strategy's earnings report, MSTR. Barry, they lost $42 per share in the quarter.
Is that a record? I've
never seen.
That has to be, you know, as a percentage of your overall revenues and company, it has to be a record. I mean, that's
My gosh. The name of the company is Strategy. Well,
and it's been cut in half. I mean, the price of Bitcoin is half of what it was.
Well, no, Strategy was 457. Now it's 123.
Yeah.
That's down 70% from its peak. Not a very good strategy. We'll be right back.
I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
And welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, reaching an all-time high above 126,000 in October 2025, Bitcoin has now lost more than half its value, tumbling close to $60,000. I think it hit $60,000 yesterday. The sell-off is coinciding with many market fears, like the service or software as a service apocalypse, which we talked about yesterday. It's improving today, however. Surging layoffs, the unwinding of recent popular trades like precious metals. Bitcoin has also wiped out all of its gains since the election of President Trump, who pledged to ensure that the United States will be the crypto capital of the planet and the Bitcoin superpower of the world. I wonder how his sons are doing with their little Bitcoin startups that they have. But many Bitcoin investors obviously are feeling the pain if they're still holding, but no one more than Strategy founder Michael Saylor. And I've heard him many times. He's famous for saying, in fact, his video from 2025 is going viral again. He said, if people in the rest of the world knew what I knew, I guess he knows something we don't know, and they agreed with me. Now, there's the key, Barry. If you're wrong in your thing, it's because people don't agree with you. Well, he says Bitcoin would go to 10 million tomorrow. A little bit of hyperbole there. But he is saying, now this is him, okay? He's a permabull on this. Volatility, he says, was a gift to the faithful. It scares away the tourist. It scares away the lazy. It scares away the people that are already conventionally rich and have all the money. If you're 20 or 30-something and are willing to do the work, if you have more time than money, then the volatility of Bitcoin is a gift to you with 20 years of stacking opportunity. So anyways, in his mind,
I love stacking.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the whole strategy behind it. It's hard to explain over the radio, but that's one of the strategies behind it. I look at it more as a pyramid. As long as there's buyers, Bitcoin's going to do well, but when you get the sellers in there, that destroys the whole strategy.
Well, and it's
like
supply
a pyramid
and demand
scheme.
Yeah, it's a supply and demand function, right? You got to keep having the you know, the demand in terms of you know, in building the aura of Bitcoin, right? And I think what's happened in this, you know, recently, like you said, it's been a crisis of confidence. You've had a lot of ETF outflows, so kind of your new crypto folks to the game, right? In terms of, you know, the long-time holders of Bitcoin are likely still holding, but maybe probably a little nervous. But then, of course, your ETF investors have already left because we've seen that in the outflows. And so, you know, where we're sitting is basically half of what it was when it hit its all-time high around 125.
And if nobody ever sold, yes, it would be a great strategy. It would be stacking and layering. But when you get massive waves of selling, to me, it's built on shaky ground. It's not built on a solid foundation. So
well,
you
Bessin
do with
said,
it what you want to do, but I'm not going to be buying it at 63,000 here.
Yeah, and Bessin said yesterday, it was another, I think this is one of the reasons it kind of, you know, kind of made that plunge towards 60K was, he basically said, the government's not going to step in and save Bitcoin. And, this is, and obviously when they were talking about having the, a cryptocurrency reserve for the U.S., that type of thing. So, part of the confidence was that the Fed, that the Treasury was going to begin buying more Bitcoin, but we haven't seen that happen yet.
No, but they do step in and help out the bond market and the U.S. dollar if needed, but not Bitcoin. And I don't ever see the day that they would do that. Intel and AMD notify customers in China of lengthy waits for CPUs. There's a demand problem. Okay, there's more demand right now. Then supply, and their warning of delivery lead times of up to 6 months. So it seems to me that the chip sector is still very healthy, despite AMD's plunge on Wednesday. By the way, AMD's up 7.1% today. Looks like Kathy Wood might have caught a falling knife without getting a finger dismembered.
Right.
We also have a big move in NVIDIA today. NVIDIA is up 5.9% today. That's a huge move. That puts it at $4.4 trillion. Give me NVIDIA chips over Bitcoin any day of the week. I think they have more intrinsic value myself, something you can hold in your palm of your hand and readily sell to somebody else, for food or whatever. But anyways, a very good day right now for the chip sector. Amazon. Here's another trend. First it was Oracle. Then who else? Someone else. Meta. They're announcing these massive investments.
Yeah, well, Google, that's what hurt them in their earnings call 2 days ago. So
Amazon shocks Wall Street with its 2026 spending plan. Now, wait a minute. What about the companies that they're going to be spending money with? That will be one of the subjects of my newsletter this week. On the one hand, the company that is spending billions and billions of dollars, who's on the other end of that deal, the recipients of that spending? And there are several of them named here in this, Amazon news. But Amazon, they're targeting $200 billion in capital expenditures for their Amazon AWS. And they signaled rapid AI-driven growth through 2026. So the growth is hurting some companies in AI, the growth in AI, the spenders, and it's benefiting others. And that's all I can tell you is today stocks like Astera Labs and CoreWeave and LITE and Teradyne and COHR Core and Amphenol and AMD and NVIDIA and Seagate, they're soaring today on the news coming out of Amazon. And Amazon is down 8 or 9%. You know, Amazon, if they didn't have the AWS, I think their profit margin, they have a ton of overhead in the delivery. The delivery of one little package to your door. And I've heard from several sources that they're a mess. Their whole organizational system at the warehouse on the delivery end is pretty dysfunctional, and they're trying to get it straightened out. I think that's costing them a lot. Let's just take a look quick, and when we come back, we're going to put Amazon under the microscope as a stock. It's down 8.1% today. Their sales were up 14%, but their earnings were only up 5%. Is Amazon becoming a single-digit grower? Well, it was on this recent quarter. More on Amazon when we come back.
And the boys upstairs just don't understand anymore. Well, the top brass don't like him talking so much, and he won't play what they say to play.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
And welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, we're going to put Amazon under the microscope here. I do not consider Amazon to be a premier growth stock anymore. I do consider it to be one of the biggest disruptors of all time. I don't know that there's been a bigger one, really, in my lifetime than Amazon. As a kid that grew up going to the mall, and even not that long ago, maybe, you know, within the last 15, 20 years, still going to the mall for Christmas and enjoying all the sights and the smells and the sounds and the music. I just love that whole experience. That's gone. Those days are gone. Amazon has been a massive disruptor, but we do own it in our premier, in our value slash relative value, because it dipped down to a PE ratio that it hadn't been at for quite some time. And of course today it's even lower. But having said that, if we put it under the microscope, it's become a dicey stock. If you look at the last decade, if you just sat it out and rode through it, like the escalator going up in the elevator. I used to love the escalator. One side's going up and the other side's going down, and you're waving at each other and looking at each other, and it's just kind of fun. And the food court, I used to love to walk into the food court and all the choices you had, Barry. That was just a...
Oh, yeah, you had...
It was,
I mean,
just
you could,
an experience.
You could go burger, Asian, Philly cheesesteak. I mean, take your pick, bourbon chicken, whatever,
yeah.
You know, whatever you want.
Free samples.
Chick-fil-A, that's where they started. Yeah.
Yes, okay. Well, over the last 10 years, doing nothing, Amazon has averaged 23.6. That's not, the S&P is 25.5. Okay, so a lot of volatility has come with that return, but it's really gotten dicey lately. If you look over the last 5 years, if you would have bought Amazon 5 years ago, you've made 6% per year total. That's it. And the market is 15.2. Then they picked up again, and I think they were boosted by their AWS, which is their Amazon Web Service, which hosts a lot of these AI. They have a definite exposure to AI because a lot of companies use their web services. So over the last 3 years, 29% per year. This is definitely an escalator. This is an elevator, not an escalator. It's going up and down. Over the last 12 months, the stock's down 8%, and the S&P's up 12.6. I think that Bezos probably picked a good time to step aside and hand it over to Jassy. Because under Jassy, he's inherited a much more volatile company. I think there's got to be a lot of headaches with the delivery part of the whole thing. Was it a mistake? Should they have relied on UPS and FedEx and the U.S. Post Office? Or was it the right thing to create their own delivery service? I don't know. I mean, that's a lot of overhead. That's a ton of overhead that they have on the products that they sell. So all in all, you know, I have a formula that that looks at the short term, intermediate term, and the long term performance. It gets a B minus, All right. So there's a lot of better stocks that have performed a lot better than Amazon has. Now, if we look at the valuation right now, I'm using a 15% growth rate, which has been in the past. That's a pretty easy hurdle for them to meet. But this recent quarter is a shocker. Over the last 5 years, their earnings growth has been 133% per year. And I'm using 15 going forward over the next 5 years. But all of a sudden, they come in with earnings growth of just 5%. You know, last quarter was 36. The one before that was 33. And then it plunges down to 5. Do stocks follow earnings? Well, they come in with 5% earnings growth, and the stock's down 7.8% today. All right? Now, the valuation is pretty decent on Amazon right now. On a relative basis, I have 83% upside potential as of yesterday. But are we going to have to lower that growth rate? I don't know. We'll just have to see where the dust settles here. They get a valuation grade of B. And overall, if you're looking for 20 stocks, 25, 30 stocks for a portfolio, I have, currently have Amazon as a hold. It's ranked 2,103 out of 5,197. That's not very good. So we do own it. You know, it's the only stock that is down, you know, of any consequence today in our entire portfolio, which, I mean, it's a great day for the market. What can I say? But Amazon, we report on our winners and our losers. We're always fair and balanced. And Amazon is, I think we're about even on the stock from where we bought it. And I have to reevaluate it here at this juncture in its history. I remember when it was a $1 stock back in the year 2000. It was under a dollar. And it was one of the survivors of the dot-com crash. One of the survivors of the dot-com crash.
Remember, it took out Books A Million. Remember, they bought
it
Books
A
Million.
It started as a bookstore, online bookstore, and took out all of the Barnes & Nobles and Books A Million and all of those. All of a sudden, you could get books delivered to your laptop and have it immediately instead of driving to the mall, finding a parking place, getting yelled at by somebody, you know, that you took their place or whatever, trudging up, getting on a crowded elevator, going into the bookstore, trying to find that title. All of a sudden, you could get books delivered. And that really was a major disruptor right there in and of itself in the reading space. So, you know, I just think the jury's out on Amazon, the current Amazon, with quite a few issues, and they got to spend $200 billion to keep the ship going. So that's also troublesome at the current time. So we're going to just hold our Amazon right now. I'm just kind of neutral on the stock here at the current time. Okay, other stocks in the news. We talked about Strategy losing $43 per share. That's unbelievable. Massive loss for Q4 2025. Anyways, that's them. Okay, the other disaster here. A company that was determined. They're out of the Netherlands. That's where Chrysler ended up. That's where Jeep ended up. That's where a lot of brands ended up in a new entity called Stellantis out of the Netherlands. And they were all in on EV. They're taking a $26 billion charge.
$26 billion?
Whoa. Charge. Unbelievable. After their EV reset, they're suspending their dividend. The company is overhauling its EV strategy after concluding it misjudged the speed of the energy transition and move too quickly towards electric vehicles relative to actual customer demand. And I've talked many times about the experience we've had, my wife and I, buying a big SUV that was all electric, totally plummeting in value, you know, within a year or so of us buying the thing. The market for them is horrible. And, of course, it's hurting the car part of Tesla. Tesla lost out in Europe. Volkswagen sold more electric vehicles in Europe than Tesla. And, of course, Stellantis, oh, yeah, that's a disaster. You know, Chrysler was bailed out once by the U.S. government. I don't know that the Netherlands will bail out Stellantis. I doubt it. Stellantis is down 22% today, 22%, with their sales down 2% and their earnings down 92%. Listen to their last four quarters of earnings. You know, Stellantis could be an ongoing concern issue here, whether they can survive this or not. Their last four quarters, their earnings were down 97%, 97%, 92%, and 92%. That's four quarters in a row of 90% drops in earnings, and their sales continue to plummet. You got an EV for sale? Anybody out there want an EV car? They're cheap right now. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, management has a lot to do with success or failure or soggy or best stock now, whatever the case may be. Management has a big, very big impact. And obviously, management at Stellantis a long time ago decided that EV was the way to go. By the way, California still has a mandate, as far as I know, to be all EV. I don't know what the year is. It was 2030, but that's coming up pretty quick now with this being 2026. Stellantis, you know, was all in, and it's a question whether that decision, it's a question. I think there's a survivability issue here with Stellantis, which, you know, look, I mean, they've got a lot of huge brands. I know people.
Especially as is. I mean, they could sell off, you know, they might have to sell off of brands here and there, right? I mean,
yeah.
That's you're kind of what you're referring to in terms of them staying as is. I mean, it's when you take a charge like that, it's a big deal.
So. Do they have the cash flow to survive it? Now, you can contrast that with Toyota, on the other hand, which is hitting a new all-time high today. Toyota's now a $383 billion company. They made the decision to not chase the EVs.
They focused on hybrid, which is you know, kind of best of both worlds, if you will.
So you can see the impact that management. Okay, now let's go the other way. Give another example of the management at GE that made GE almost fail. In 08 and 09, GE almost failed because that management had chosen to go down the giving loans and being in the financial business. They diversified the company instead of diversifying it and nearly ran it into the ground. That was Jeffrey Immelt. And along comes few others in between him and the current CEO. And finally, a crackerjack CEO comes along. He says, let's split off Vernova, GE Vernova. Let's split off the healthcare. Let's keep GE focused on aerospace. And you can look at the record of what that stock has done, GE. I put a little arrow on my chart of when he took over. I can't think of his name.
Larry Culp. Yeah.
He took over. You would have made a bloody fortune on Larry Culp. And it's still going up. I mean, GE Vernova is still a great stock. GE Aerospace is still a great stock. Not so much the healthcare one. That to me is still the soggy one. But management, look at Jensen Huang. You know, look at the decisions Intel made. And look at a guy like Jensen Huang coming along with a graphics card chip, turning it into a processor, a semiconductor. And the management decisions that they made, some are winners, some are losers. And it can be said really for anything. You know, the management of sports teams, baseball, general managers. Look at the winning track record. Say what you want about New England, but Kraft has won. That organization at New England has won a lot of championships. Even now, this kind of proves that there must be something to the ownership, because Belichick and Brady are long gone, right, from New England
right.
Patriots.
Yeah.
And they're going to be in the Super Bowl again this time around. A whole different cast of characters. So anyways, management is critical. And that's why that track record, okay, doesn't mean a track record can't be turned around. But when I look at a stock like AT&T, Verizon, Disney, Stellantis, I just see the odds of them turning the ship around. Disney's got a new CEO. Iger produced nothing for one decade. I just would not have a lot of faith in putting money in investing in Disney because of the track record, which is a reflection of the management. And then you can look at some of the terrible franchises out there in the sports world. You know, that Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, some of the perennial cellar dwellers, the Chicago White Sox. I hate to pick on different franchise. The San Diego Padres have definitely been a doormat for a long time. They've improved recently. They're up for sale.
I spent some money.
$2.1 billion will get you the San Diego Padres. Hey, they sell out every game. That's all I know. With the new, under their, of course, our owner died of the Padres. Unfortunately, there goes the management, and the team is up for sale. And as far as I know, the leading bidders are right now are guys that own soccer teams in Great Britain. I'm not excited about that. I want a baseball guy in
there. The one thing I can tell you is they got deep pockets regardless.
They're billionaires, but they do they know how to when to do a pitch out? I mean, do they know when to walk a guy intentionally? Don't pitch to Ohtani. Just walk the guy. There's a lot of management decisions there that need to be made. Anyways, management is very, very critical. And, you know, some people can even do it. I always really admired the Tampa Bay Bucks or the Tampa Bay Rays on a budget, a shoestring budget, keeping that franchise afloat.
Staying relevant and
relevant
winning championships.
Yeah. In a division with the Yankees and the Boston Red Sox and the Orioles and Toronto. Come on. And their small budget, money ball. And I like it when David beats Goliath. I look at myself a little bit as a David. Wall Street is the Goliath. Merrill Lynch, J.P. Morgan. Oh, God, those guys are giants in the industry. And I'm just a little guy with my little slingshot of Best Stocks Now, my little Best Stocks Now app, which has helped me tremendously. Anyways, okay, well, look, I'm working on the newsletter today. It's going to go out tomorrow afternoon. We'll have an update on this earnings season. Really, that holds all the cards right there. You can throw everything else out the window about the rising layoffs, about the sell-off in crypto, about the volatility in silver. At the end of the day, the S&P 500 trades on earnings. And as of last Friday, it was very good. The earnings picture was very good. Did it improve this week? Did it get worse this week? Well, we'll do the work. We'll find out. I have a hunch it still looks pretty darn good, and you have a rebound in the market today. To get 4 weeks of the newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. That includes the app. learn how to use that app. It's not very difficult to learn. And if you'd like to talk to us about money management, 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.